Emerging Technologies Group monthly podcast. Each month, we'll speak to a different ILTA group on what's new and exciting in their space. This month is the spotlight month for the Emerging Technologies Group. So in lieu of a structured podcast, we're actually recording the semi-regular telecast that we do. This is an open mic forum where we talk about all kinds of technology that interests us. On the call today, we have Mark Manoukian, Dale Qualls, I'm just going to go to first names, Nate, Gregory, Roy, Scott, and Bryce. There'll be a number of other people that could be jumping in. We have a crowdsourced website that Nate built a while ago where we allow people to enter questions and then they're voted to the top of the list. I'm going to go through those questions and we'll just jump right in. The first thing on here we have is, what is the leading edge in litigation support software? Is there anything good on the horizon? This outdistanced all the other questions by a long shot. I'm not sure who posted it, but I'm hoping it's one of the people who are on the call right now, and they can jump in and start the discussion on this.
This is Dale. I'm going to be in the market to get out of our environment, which is a concordance environment for most of our database use, and we use iPro as our document review tool. I'm going to be looking heavily at iPro's new Eclipse product, which is a web-based relativity-type product. I'm unsure of all the capabilities of it. You know, on the iPro side that we have now, we're just using it for review, annotations, production, in correlation with our local document processor. But I want to move to a web-based system to make it easier for people to do out-of-office review. As it stands now, because VPNs aren't the fastest thing in the world, I have to keep a slew of remote desktops available, and people can VPN in and then use the remote desktop to do the review, just because of the pure size of the images. So I'm going to be looking at Eclipse, which they first announced Eclipse, as far as I'm aware, at last year's ILTA conference. It looks like a pretty neat product, but I'm also not sure of what the production pieces are that go with it to be able to do in-house production, which I don't want to do, but I want to have the ability to do in case we need to make those steps for a quick production. So that's the only thing I'm aware of that's semi-new. We priced a relativity box a couple of years ago for a case that we had come in with about 2 million documents. And the set of a relativity box at that point was going to be a couple hundred grand, which I understand is much less now. But so that's what I'm looking forward to, is checking out Eclipse. Anybody have any experience with Eclipse?
No, but this is Bryce. I talked to them Monday about doing a product webinar.
And this is Nate. We've had product webinars from iPro for Eclipse.
Yes.
And from all the other, I guess, more major vendors in this product category. We decided to punt and just kind of wait it out and see what kind of rises to the top.
Yeah, I think we're in the same position as you are, Nate. I think even to the point where we have the same product in-house that they no longer support and want you to move to the newer version. And it's funny, I think what has made us do more so is we just push more stuff to the outside vendors, to the hosted litigation sites. And we were only handling small stuff as it was, so. Yeah, we're in a holding pattern, waiting to see kind of what rises to the top. So, and I guess one of the has anybody seen a working demo of Summation Pro? Are they or had a chance to actually put it in house?
I saw chatter about it, but I don't know anything about Summation.
We asked them for a POC, and they didn't have anything ready yet. So, again, one of the major reasons we just went into the holding pattern for that. It sounds like everybody else is in the same position.
They're really pushing people though to sign up. They called me yesterday because we used to have Summation as of the 17th of this month. We're not renewing with anybody, but if you don't renew and so you do want to wait to see the product, the day after your support expires, you go into the new customer mode, which is double the price of what you could renew at if you were still a customer.
Right. Yeah, we went down that whole discussion with our reps, and
so
we'll see what happens if and when we decide to go to it again, right?
Yeah. If you say you really want to go with them, I'm sure the double probably will not be truly 100%.
Changing direction completely, the popular question on the site was Raspberry Pi, what's happening with it? Now, I think correct me if I'm wrong, but Roy, you got a? Did you get one of these units? And Nate, did you order one as well?
This is Nate. I didn't order one, but I'm curious about what people are doing with them.
I know Jerry Askew, who is sometimes on this call, had received his, but unfortunately he can't talk about it because he didn't join us today.
Yeah, we got some of those. It's sitting on our desk right now.
So have you done anything with them yet?
The Debian, the distros are a little bit buggy, so I'm trying to get into a more stable distro. But we powered them up and put them on screen. They look cool, and we're still trying to figure out what to do with them besides gathering dust.
Now, I really haven't followed it since that initial release, but are there some project sites that are popping up for these things? Or?
Yeah, most people are trying to install XBMC on them so they can like stream video and movies and all the good stuff.
So they have a video card on them?
Yes, they have a built-in video card on the chip itself.
And it has enough horsepower to stream HD?
Yes. And it also has a HDMI connection and a built-in NIC to USBs. And you power it using a USB. You have to have a SD card to boot, at least a Class 10 for speed-wise. And you can install various versions of Linux. The Arch version is usually the best and the fastest. And down the road, they're trying to install, get it working for BSD also.
Open SUSE.
No SUSE. No SUSE.
Have you tried running something like DSL or Puppy on it?
Not yet. I think Arch Linux is like Puppy.
Yeah, it's another one of those small distros. Yeah, really small micro distros. Yeah, I mean, one of the things I was interested in doing with my son's, my wife is still against it, is to build an arcade cabinet. And that might be worth it to use one of those for that.
Yeah. It's like a Panda board or, what you call this, Puppy board? Or have you guys heard of the Panda board?
No.
They're a little bit more expensive. They're about like $180, but these things are darn cheap. They're like $35, so, you know, to play and fool around with, even though if you want to host your picture website at home, you know, it's like the perfect little box or a backup tool. Or a small NAS. It's like a perfect little device to do that.
No, you just hook up drives to the HDMI board or the
USB
3 or?
I think it's USB 2. For something small, it's perfect.
Changing directions again, we have paperless. Less paper or no paper. I don't know who weighed in on this one or who voted it up, but I'd love to hear what people were thinking about this. Any paperless initiatives that are actually working out there?
Well, we continue to roll out PDF applications and digital signing, and we're making progressive steps at using less paper. And something just came across my desk today, indicating that the state of Virginia, for example, just passed a law allowing online notarization. That sounded pretty cool, or interesting at least.
No,
but it's
no.
Very frustrating that attorneys love paper, and if they can't have paper, they love having a picture of a piece of paper. And, it's just so much more functional to have the, content in its original or an electronic searchable format. So.
And, Mark, are you having
what's up,
clients do the signing on these documents, the PDF documents?
Not yet.
The electronic signing, no?
I think we've got, we tested, for example, DocuSign with our DMS, which is net documents, and it works. I know there's another, the other big electronic signing vendor is EchoSign, and Adobe purchased them, but they're integrating with Adobe, so maybe there are some additional value adds that apply to the fact that, it's built into Adobe in that respect, but DocuSign is still my digital signing vendor of choice.
I had some experience with the EchoSign. Last month I had to fill out an evaluation for one of my interns from her college, and it used the EchoSign thing. So I signed up quick, and actually it worked really well.
Yeah.
But since then, I've been have had the rep calling me. I've gotten emails from them. So it's like a marketing tool.
Yeah.
If you don't belong to it and you use it, then you're going to get marketed into buying an account or whatever they want you to do. So
that's right.
It used to be called Paperless Proforma. I think it's called Elite Prebill now. We have that here. And it's a really cool product. The accounting department especially loves it because it moves them from becoming a data entry to just, you know, approving edits and passing them through. Not as well received by the attorneys as I thought it would be, but I think once we can do more stuff with tablets and let them, you know, look at their pre-bills on that, I think it'll be a real win. I don't know if anybody else out there is using the Elite Pre-bill, but the initial version that Oracle put out there was a bit of a mess, and then they revised it, fixed a lot of it. So it
we're using those same products, for example, in our accounting system, and whether it's, you know, pre-bills and online editing of pre-bills or, you know, rendering of invoices in PDF format so that we can come back and access them later and have that electronic picture of what was actually sent to the client. And the thing that I suppose I've observed is historically that those things were third-party applications and not offered by the accounting system vendors, but now the accounting system vendors are either building their own or they're just in one instance.
Or they're buying the companies that do
it. Yeah, that's right.
Mark?
Yeah.
Is your attorney population mostly younger who embrace technology?
No. And, you know, there are a number of attorneys that really don't like the electronic pre-bill. And the younger attorneys definitely like it. I mean, they look at that stuff and they say, oh, that's really cool. I want to try that. The older attorneys, you know, I mean, they tend to just outright either dismiss it or outright buy into it. And that neither camp really thinks much about it. But this particular experience has been instructive because this is one of those occasions where we're bringing on attorneys kind of like one at a time. You know, it's kind of like we don't train people. We don't just bring everybody in and train them all on a new systems much anymore. Since change seems to be perpetual, it's not like we're perpetually easing people into new technologies and solutions, and it's a very different training mindset that happened to coincide with our rollout of our pre-bill editing software, where we're okay with taking a year to like roll out a product to go person to person, say, hey, we'd like you to try this, and ease them into it.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Marcus. I mean, we've seen that in a number of different things. We stopped doing the force them into a classroom, make them sit there and do it, and instead we're doing more walk around one-on-one training.
Yeah, it's just like
targeted short time and let them do it.
Yeah.
Because even in the best case scenarios, we're getting, you know, 50% attendance, you know, for people to sign up for something. You know, that was considered a success. So now we just have a list of people to check off, and you just keep going through the list until everybody's visited.
Right. And then you start over with whatever the next solution is that you need to ease into your firm.
Sure. And in some cases, you know, we've got three or four different initiatives we're training on, and you can stop by and you know, hit the person on two or three of them at once if they've got the time.
Are you trying to supplement or enhance that at all with any type of online learning?
You know, we put in, when we did our Windows 7 Office 2010 rollout, we put in Moodle, and we made a bunch of you know, Captivates that we converted for them to look at and kind of tracked who was looking at them and who wasn't, and the people that went through the videos got a PC sooner, that kind of thing. and for the most part, that actually worked pretty well. But then there was just that whole group of people that just never bothered to look at the videos. Just like anything else, you know, some people are going to do it, some people aren't going to do it at all, and everybody has advice on a better way for you to do it.
Have you been satisfied with Moodle?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was kludgy to set up at first. In fact, Mark, I think I asked you for some advice on some of the things when we did. It's really better just to talk to somebody who's done it already.
Yeah.
And I went with the Turnkey Appliance for it, too.
Oh, that's perfect.
TurnkeyLinux.org. I think I just downloaded that, and we customized it from there. We ended up not even bothering with the Active Directory integration just because it was such a hassle to try to get to work, and just did a dump of users and put them in there.
Yeah, you have to use the LDAP integration.
I think we've tooled around with that for a while, and we're trying to get something to work. And you know, at some point, we just had to punt and worry more about content than whether people could had a seamless login or not.
Well, it's a the thing is that we've taken pitches from other vendors on learning management systems, and you know, you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars. That's a you've got Moodle, which is a no cost, but you need to customize it versus something that's tens of thousands of dollars. So, I mean, Moodle's definitely kludgy and not necessarily convenient to set up. But, I mean, if you're talking like $30,000,
right?
You know, if you can find somebody somewhere, whether it's on Mechanical Turk on Amazon or just somebody who has some experience with it.
Now, have you ever used either of those services to on an in-house project?
I have not, but, you know, I do use contract employees, and indeed Gregory
right.
is
right.
a contract employee. I'd like to hire Dale's Joomla person.
She did a great job.
So.
And what was that, Dale? Was that somebody local or somebody you found online?
No, we had an intern here. One of our clients in Germany, their daughter was needed to come to the U.S. as part of their college program. And needed a place to call home. And, apparently in Germany you can go directly into law school from high school, but you have to go out and get some foreign experience as part of the whole program. So she came here, and she's an IT major, or she was an IT major, and she also is into law, so she wanted to come to some place where she could deal with IT and legal work to satisfy everything she needed for her visa while she was here. So I'm thinking, oh, what am I going to have this intern do for me? And we started talking, and she worked for IBM as a summer intern for 6 months, built all of their stuff over there in Joomla.
Oh, wow.
So
it's very easy to work. It's not like you have to be a programmer or a developer or anything.
Well, I tell you what, that's true. But she went over and above, and I actually am going to have to do a lot of work to catch up on being able to enhance what she left me with, because she used Eclipse to do all the back-end code editing and implemented Ajax into it. She really went, whole hog, which, just when she walked out, I said, well, I'll probably never turn that server on again. But I'm going to work on it, just because she basically recreated our entire intranet with sort of a few pieces that we have that are custom things for reviews and things like that. In 5 weeks.
The built-in mods that are available out there?
She used modules and she used components.
Yeah.
She was very sharp, very sharp.
So now, Dale, do you have something that you can, if you need to make a change to it, that you can now, though?
Oh, yeah. Because she wrote in administrative pages that administrators have access to go in and add content, add stories, add articles. But, we have that's where we keep track of who's in and who's out of the office and where they are and how they're reachable. And, that's all updated by our receptionist every day. So there's an admin page that ties into additional tables that we built in the MySQL backend to bring that up. And she had to write a custom admin page to make use of it. And then she also tied into our existing SQL server to pull in information out of our personnel table. So it'll automatically populate every month the birthdays for that month and the anniversaries for that month. She got pretty involved. It was pretty neat.
That's cool.
But did you have her box this up and sell it?
Say it again?
You didn't have her box it up and sell it?
No, I was afraid she'd charge me for it then. But she didn't like the way some of the menus rolled out, so she modified code in the modules, I think it was, might have been component, to change the way that the rolling menus worked.
Now, when you do something like that, Dale, and the new version of that module comes out, can you apply it, or do you have to be careful because you're going
to
break?
You have to be careful because you'll break your integration.
Yeah.
But the last day she was here, I was out. She sent me an email and she said, I spent 6 hours today commenting all of the code. She said, so I've commented everything, and I got here. She left me printouts with screenshots with post-it notes. And said, email me anytime. I'm more than happy to help you with this, to keep it going. She was very intent on doing it. She loved it. So it was fun. And I got to tell you, it's far faster. Our existing intranet is built on classic ASP. just because I built it back in 2000, we just keep evolving it instead of replacing it. So with a little bit of tweaking and adding a couple things that are missing on the new site, I'm hoping we roll that new set out first of the year.
I wouldn't worry. I mean, ASP and PHP are like, you know, they're almost line for line the same. But you shouldn't have too much trouble if she modified things in PHP.
Got about 20 minutes left on the call. I'm going to switch to another topic. The next highest voted item was Chinese hackers, the FBI, and law firms. What should we be doing to better protect our clients? I'll add on that and ourselves. I mean, I guess I can chime in. What little I know on this is the FBI in New York had a meeting with supposedly 100 different law firms in New York. I never got the email of the call, so I guess it was 100 other law firms.
That's because you're secure.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm already locked down. Now, I belong to the FBI InfraGuard program, which is like a civilian-run program that in conjunction with the FBI where they just talk about different security issues in different verticals. And, you know, there's a weekly call that I'm on and everything, and still I wasn't part of this. So I only heard second and third hand about what they had to say. But they gave specific examples, and it was Canadian firms mainly in this incident that were hacked into and because they were considered a soft target by these Chinese groups. And it was around a merger with a large Australian company trying to, I guess, get a mining, with a mining company merger. But I don't know, does anybody know anything more about that or have any experience with Chinese hackers themselves?
Well, hey, this is Ben.
Hey,
sorry I was late joining, guys. We still have an ongoing major wireless network carrier failure here in the UK today, so good times. I was at an event up in Dublin not that long ago, a legal technology event, where a couple of agents from the FBI who I guess were involved in that meeting showed up, and they gave a presentation about all the ridiculous threats out there and what they've done. And so there was a little bit of discussion about it. I don't know if anyone in the room had attended that supposed meeting with 100 top law firms, because there were guys there from DLA Piper and from other, you know, fairly sizable firms, including Peter Lesser. I don't think Peter was at that meeting, so I kind of questioned who was there. But, you know, he went over some of the details of stuff they talked about. And I don't know what your environments are like, but I just know from where I've worked previously, the reality is, and the thing that they talked about, is that it doesn't matter how good your technology is. It's going to be social engineering that kills everybody. That's where it's going to come down to. It's so easy. And the example I'll give you, I don't know if I mentioned this before, I was telling somebody this story, is during our ISO, our first round of it, before I was at the firm, our ISO 27001 certification, my information security officer, a guy named Paul McKay, Mac, he's actually going to be at conferences here, so you can hear him speak. He hired a guy to come in and do, you know, penetration testing, and it included social engineering. And they sat at the hotel across the street from our office, and the guy said to Mac outright, he says, I'm going to go across the street, I'm going to steal your firewall, your physical firewall, and bring it back to you. And Mac kind of laughed it off. And literally, inside of an hour, the guy came back holding the firewall from the data center. He had talked his way in through security. He got into the data center. He unracked the thing, unplugged it, and brought it over to Mac sitting in the hotel. And, you know, that was the first wake-up call of, you know, where do you have to go to cover yourself? And it's far beyond technology. It's far beyond, you know, yeah, we all have to have perimeter stuff. We all have to do that. We all have to do the antivirus, the anti-malware, all that stuff. But if you're not doing the absolute basic, which I know for a fact, my last two firms, we failed, on my watch, we failed to do good quality education of everybody. And you're only as strong as your weakest link. And that's a brilliant example of it, because at the end of the day, that was a security guard, not employed by my firm, but who had, was entrusted with securing my firm at some level, wasn't he?
Well, you know, this kind of brings us to that the ADP spam emails, the phishing emails that we're receiving right now. And employees just don't seem to understand that, you know, technically you are allowed to receive email from complete strangers. And just because an email gets through doesn't mean that it's safe and that you should click on the links in it. And so, you know, there's a sort of a cultural change that needs to happen where, you know, maybe you should be circumspect about certain things in the same way that maybe you lock your car out of habit or lock your house out of habit. The contemporary habits of people just have not caught up with what they need to be.
Well, how often do you have to explain to someone, you get the email, is this spam?
Yeah, we all get those. I mean, it's great being an IT person and having, you know, I don't know, 200 people get a piece of spam, and that those 200 individual pieces of spam then turn into 200 pieces of spam for you. And 80% of the answer to that question is based on whether or not, you know, if somebody has to ask, then I know that you weren't expecting this. That's 80% of the weight of the answer right there. There are occasions where I just don't even look or read it, and I just say yes based on the fact that you asked.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's,
I've been getting a lot from LinkedIn. Have you been seeing there's a lot of LinkedIn spam going out now?
Yeah, we had a bunch of that a few months ago, but that seems to have tapered off. ADP
yeah,
is the last
I'm getting
one.
This.
ADP and UPS.
It's not so big here.
This is
right. And I think I was going to say the problem is what I've said to people, what we say to people is, if in doubt, phone. There's always, you can always phone, but the problem is people, I guess we take for granted, we're used to it, we understand it, we're very suspect of it because we've been in the game long enough, and it's hard to imagine, but some of these people, even people, you know, younger than me, I mean, that's kind of where my barometer is. If they're younger than me, they ought to know better because I've grown up with a computer since I was 12, but yeah, it's, They don't get it. They don't think about it. They miss it, and that's all it takes is one time.
And this is Scott. It's growing beyond just regular spam and simple phishing attacks now. I know that we've had a couple emails come to me directly from partners who were asked to engage in business. When you look at the email, it looks 100% legit. They're talking about existing companies in the area. Working with existing patents, existing numbers on patents, it basically comes in as a request that says, hey, I need local representation in one of the areas where your office exists, working with this company, and the guy's got names of the local company and the local company's engineers and the local company's management, talking about, you know, patent disputes and how that they want us to collect money. It's the old scam of, you know, we're gonna collect, you know, $500,000 and you can keep 10% for your, you know, your work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same old thing. But it's very targeted and very specific to legal now. What's tipping everybody off is it's still coming from Google accounts and Hotmail accounts. So people, you know, raise an eyebrow and say, why is somebody doing business on these free accounts? So it still does get stopped, but had that come from a legitimate business or something that looked like a legitimate business email address, they may not even have come to me. So it's really interesting that they're getting much more sophisticated in the attempts for law firms now.
Well, you raise a good point there because the reality is how far removed is it, honestly? How difficult? Because I could think just off the top of my head several ways to do it, to you know, inject a little man in the middle there and actually send it from the valid domain. You know, the way we all pass our mail through places like Mimecast or Postini or whomever you're using, it's really not that hard to catch a company that's not fully prepared, but doesn't have enough IT resource, that isn't paying enough attention. And I would bet you'll see eventually someone hijacking domain names. And they don't even have to go that far, because in reality, it's very common over here for companies to use .co.uk, very common. You know, my website is bonpierce.com, but we own .co.uk. Realistically, there's so many derivations of it that it's easy enough that I could, you know, own keglerbrown.co.uk, and at some point someone might not question it.
Especially if your company only has an American presence and isn't looking at any of those other international domain suffixes, right?
Yeah.
It's also compounded now with IPv6 using the new DNS naming conventions.
Yeah.
Because
the sheer number of addresses too.
Well, you get out to it. It's a greenfield opportunity for hackers, because go up and set an IPv6 domain name up when the client isn't even running IPv6 yet, and just start routing all their mail through it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Great idea, Scott.
But let's start our own little hacker community and let's just fleece everybody.
It's a good thing Jerry's not on the call, because he might be trying this already.
That's what he's actually doing right now. Well, Scott opened us up for a great segue. He mentioned IPv6, and Scott, I think you're doing some interesting stuff with IPv6 right now, aren't you?
Well, we're looking at implementing it when we move to our co-location center. We're physically moving our headquarters site about 6 or 8 blocks away, and when we do that, we're getting rid of our data center and moving into a co-location facility here as first part of our business continuity. And since we're moving anyhow and we have to readdress things anyhow, I'm just going to go ahead and put IPv6 in day one. So I've been doing a lot of research. I don't have much to report, but there's certainly things like we just talked about with the spam stuff and DNS that people really need to be thinking about, even if they don't transition yet. They need to think about, you know, securing their firewalls and their systems that already have IPv6 enabled for the day that it happens to go live, either by accident or on purpose. There's been a couple ISPs that have turned on IPv6, and because it is auto-configured, there's some small companies that really were unprepared, and all of a sudden they started, you know, routing IPv6 traffic and didn't realize it because everything was auto-configured. These are very small shops, of course, not big shops, but it certainly is something you need to think about, even if you're not going to address it. You need to think about, if they do turn it on, what does that mean for me? That's probably the biggest lesson I saw in the last couple of weeks of doing research.
And, Scott, have you set up a test network for IPv6 yet?
No, I haven't got that far yet. We're just doing some initial design type of stuff and layout. It's a whole new world of worrying about address spaces again. So I sent that design guide around to a few of you that I looked at that looked like a pretty decent starting plan, but it still has a lot more legs that need to be taken care of there before that thing runs away.
Yeah. Has anybody else set up a test network yet?
We have not. This is Mark.
Yeah, I was half thinking of making this an intern project, but I get the deer in headlights stare if I mention IPv6 to one of my interns, so I'm not sure that either I'm not getting the right interns or it's not a good project for an intern to do.
I actually put that on an intern questionnaire when we were interviewing our interns. Out of like 20 people who interviewed, only one knew what IPv6 was.
Did you ask?
Can I ask you guys real quickly, since you guys are cavalierly throwing out the word intern, am I the only guy here that doesn't have any interns? And I mean, should I be hiring? Should I be getting some? Do you pay these people?
We actually just started paying them, yeah. But previously we hadn't. As long as they were receiving college credit, we weren't. But now, since I have them doing real work, I think they should get real money.
We don't pay them.
So.
I can't afford to pay anybody at the moment, but I would love to have someone.
We had a paid intern, but he right now we don't have space for an intern, whether we pay them or not.
Right.
I mean, I inherited kind of an intern program when I started here from my predecessor, but I've had at least one and most of the time two interns almost the entire tenure I've been here for, you know, 3, 4, 5 month stints.
Two interns on top of how many people in your team?
Seven.
Damn, I'm losing out.
It's a great way to supplement your staff, especially if you need, you know, when inevitably you have one or two people out and the phones are ringing like mad, they can at least be a live voice on the other end of the you know, level one help desk. If they can't answer the question.
Our phones never ring on the help desk. No one ever called their help desk.
They just email, perfect. Right?
Yeah, I don't know where you guys work, but nothing ever breaks at my firm.
And the great is runners for keyboards, you know, PC setups, all that kind of
right.
stuff.
Just the biggest wireless provider in the UK goes down, that's all.
Well, that's why no one's calling. They can't.
Yeah.
No problem. No calls, no problem.
Exactly.
Lance, yeah. you had a really great intern once. I mean, you've had some really great success with interns too. So
yes, and I mean the only problem I've had, well, I had one intern. He was a sleeper. Literally would be sleeping too often, so he didn't last long.
awesome.
And then I had the other intern that we caught going through someone's desk and looking at their pay stubs. So that was the only two downsides I had to it.
All right, so you're looking. Things are looking good for you.
That's out of probably. Geez, I've had 50 interns. I was actually going to set up my own LinkedIn group for IT, D&G IT intern alumni.
Wow.
So when these people get really really good jobs, they can talk to me later.
Yeah, I
remember when?
You'll be fine right, as long as I don't save that purple dress.
We're about to wrap things up. We're coming to close in on the hour. I had an item here, Windows 8, best Windows ever, or is it just the next Windows? Anybody want to chime in on Windows 8? Have they loaded it up yet and put their application stack on there? And
Would somebody remind me, is it available to those of us
yes.
who are in like volume?
Yeah, customer preview
yes.
is available. And what
yes.
did they say? Is it the first week of August for the release to manufacturing?
According to a tweet I saw earlier, yes.
It's an even release number. I didn't think you're supposed to use those.
Got it. We've loaded it up onto our image. We took one of our images and just upgraded it. It's cool. It's very cool. It's just an interface at this point. And honestly, the announcement of the Surface tablet, I think, is a bit confusing and disappointing, because the one that is probably going to be the closest look and feel as far as weight and that kind of stuff is going to be running the cheesed down version of it. So it's not going to run all your Windows 7 apps, whereas the full Windows 8 one that will run all your stuff, it'll run whatever's on your stack, is going to be a heavier, different processor one. But I'm looking at what's the ARM-based thing going to look like, because right now we're testing it out on a Samsung Slate, which Bo put me onto that one, and we tried that out. It's cool, but it's heavy as heck. But just the interface is slick. It's nice. It's absolutely an Apple ripoff. But then again, Windows was a Mac ripoff, so who are we kidding?
Which was a Xerox ripoff.
Yeah.
Those guys at Park are still upset.
Yes. They would be if they knew.
It's really flat, and they hid a lot of stuff. They just keep hiding stuff like they did in Windows 7. It's the Mac, but otherwise, it feels like, at least now, like everything under the hood is the same.
I played with a big display that had Windows 8 on it, and you're supposed to be able to pull your items out from the side or that kind of thing. And that seems still pretty hit and miss. Again, it's still a customer preview, so I guess they haven't smoothed that out. But
I mean, I guess it didn't excite me in that respect. I think, again, I was looking for something, putting it on an iPad, and the thing we tried doing, because, well, I thought, why not give it a shot, was we've been running this, I don't know if any of you guys bought this Citrix VDI in a box thing, pretty much ready to go Citrix VDI environment. So we got that running because I had to convince my guys that people might want to access things through their home computers, and that we might, it might be a good idea. I appreciate all the challenges of supporting that sucks, but I was too lazy to carry a laptop back and forth. So we tried doing that, spinning it up, and then with the Citrix receiver on the iPad, launched that. So pretty much, voila, I had Windows 8 on my iPad, but it didn't handle the touch aspects of it, obviously, because it didn't really control the interface the same way.
I see.
Right. Well, that's probably more of a feature lack in the Citrix receiver client than anything else, right?
Absolutely is.
Yeah.
Absolutely is.
Yeah.
But that's part of the, because look how cool it would have been if it did work.
Yeah.
If Windows 8 on an iPad, with all the processing still going on elsewhere.
That's 14
that's
hours of packing you can't get back.
Now, one thing
yeah.
I will actually, this segues a little bit. Ben shared a link with me for a site called Leap Motion. .com, L-E-A-P.
Yes.
Motion.
Have you guys seen that?
Yeah,
is that the hand gesture thing?
Yeah,
yes.
It's pretty cool. Go there and there's a video right at the top of the page and play that thing. It looks pretty cool.
It is awesome. I pre-ordered one. I was saying to Lance, the really weird thing is That company, the guy who founded it, who's the CTO, a guy named David Holtz, is my cousin's son. So, you know, I remember literally about 8 months ago, my mom coming back from seeing my cousin saying, oh, Linda's talking about how David's got funding, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, oh, sounds real interesting, Mom. And then when I saw the product, it is cool because it puts the Kinect to shame, and it's the pricing is like $60. And if it works anything like what David demonstrated it to work like and what looks like in that video, it is going to be really, really cool to mess with. And you can only – it really was Minority Report.
Yeah. And if I can get the thing in my hands and try and make it work with my PlayStation 3, I think the world will be a better place.
This thing is awesome, the way you can play Fruit Ninja.
It is. It's Fruit Ninja on a giant conference room screen.
So I wonder if – yeah, do you think – didn't was it Android that got nailed by Apple for the pinching motion on the iPad – and they won those patent cases?
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Because I just saw them doing pinching on the screen.
I think the thing with his device is that it's really only going to be limited by the software. The thing where it is it's pretty much a motion sensing camera thing like Kinect is. So if they have to tweak up how they're doing or what they're doing as far as gestures, the gestures are really controlled by the OS.
Well, see, that's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask, especially since they showed Angry Birds and Fruit Ninja, and it looked like a Google Map. I wonder if they didn't have this connected to an iPad.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I mean, it really could be connected to anything, from what I understand. And you know, for me, the same way you know you may joke about the PlayStation. Yeah, I'd love to see this on my Kinect. Yeah, I mean, it'd be cool because also I got to tell you, the Kinect, as cool as it is, it's very imprecise and it can frustrate the hell out of my kids. Imagine the height difference between a 3-year-old and a 9-year-old, and it's enough that they get annoyed with Kinect. So
that's cool. Hey, we just hit the 4 o'clock hour. I thought we ended on something cool. So Ben, thanks for that. We're going to wrap it up. I want to thank Dale in advance and Nate for their audio editing for the podcast, removing all of the uncomfortable silences that we inevitably have, and my grammar gaffes. I think that's it. Thanks everybody for your time. Shoot me any ideas to add to my master list of things that we'll call on you on later. And we'll talk again soon.